to those looking to live outside the box of religious performance and inside the love of an awesome Father, this is the God Journey. Well, it's one of those beautiful spring days in Southern California, looking down out of my second story window down to Sarah's garden in the backyard, and the joy she's bringing to that as it springs to life again this year. I tell you, that's an ever-changing reality down there. Sarah's, it's not just plants that make it all year long. It's different plants that rise and merge and bring color in this season and fade. And you take pictures of it and it changes. Every season is different. Colors of it are outstanding. As I've said before, my wife makes everything in my life more beautiful because she's been there. And a lot of that has to do with loving her and watching what God has shaped in me, in learning to love Sarah as deeply as he wants her loved. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson, and I want to welcome you to this edition of The God Journey. Tomorrow morning, if all goes well, I'll be hopping on a big bird and heading out to the East Coast, Virginia, Maryland area, meeting with some people that have relationships with the folks I was with in Dallas-Fort Worth area last November, kind of coming out of a, for lack of a better word, a cultic kind of church organization that was extremely manipulative and conforming people's behaviors. And that left them in some places that God's now inviting them into some great freedom. So I'm getting to go out there and spend some time with some of those folks and looking forward to that. And then hang around the area a little bit longer and handle some folks in Richmond. And then on May 4 in near the D.C. area, we're going to have a day to talk about the seeding community conversation, the greater gathering, and how do we become catalysts for that. It's drawn from the new book I'm working on, and we're going to have a chance on that day to interact with folks who've wanted to come. So pretty excited about the trip. If it all happens, last night my mom had to have emergency surgery, and things look very dicey, and the surgery was successful, things have gone well, and looks like maybe a godsend. So I think things are settling here, unless something changes later in the day. But other than that, planning on hopping on a big bird tomorrow morning. First time I've done that since the Israel trip, but actually the first time I've been out to hang out with people since November. So it's been a while. I have enjoyed and am enjoying this time of writing. And Phil, you say, where is the writing going? We're getting there. We're tracking now. I think we've got things all worked out, and it's just a matter of shaping it, refining it, cutting it down a little bit size-wise. So excited about it. Some of the themes, in fact, we'll talk about today will come from that book, because I was really touched by how people responded to last week's podcast. It's a Journey was simply kind of a last minute, had a thought on my heart and thought maybe it would help people explore. From the emails and blog comments, I'm really blessed by how people did respond. And to really, for those of you that haven't thought of this life in Jesus as a journey, and you don't, if we've been raised in, you know, conformity-based ideas that here's the rules, follow them, try and be good for God, that doesn't think about a journey. That's about performance. And every day you're supposed to get it all right. And when you don't, then you've got to wrestle with guilt and condemnation and those kinds of things. And when you see life as a journey and God's waking me up to a different reality, teaching me to live inside of his love, then I get to accept where I'm at today. It's not where I want to be, of course not, but it is where I'm at. It's where this journey has led me, and now I want to be led today by him. Certainly in these journeys, we take our own way sometimes, these little rabbit trails off into the thicket. And God comes and finds us and invites us back onto that trail, that journey that he wants us on to transform us. We may be on that for a bit, and then something else distracts us, so we go over here and get lost a bit, and he invites us back on. But hopefully the passion for the journey is not performance. Not, God, I got to get it all right today. Lord, I want to learn to respond to you and your love today. I just want to learn to respond to what you're putting in my heart. And then I get to handle life. This is what I love about it. And I got some of feedback from this, which was very, very helpful, particularly people facing end-of-life issues. Our whole Christian religious orientation to trying to get God to give us what we want for our life so our life is easy and convenient oftentimes doesn't let us deal with reality. We're so busy holding out hope for a miracle. And in some places, we were actually taught, if you don't absolutely believe you're going to get a miracle, you won't. So you can't talk about not getting it, because part of getting a miracle is convincing God that you're convinced that it's yours, and then he has to do it for you. which is just crazy because what it doesn't allow us to do is take the reality of where we're at today and be able to live in that and make choices and decisions that honor the place that we're in rather than the place we'd like to be. And I you know, one of my dear friends died a few years ago of cancer. And he was so convinced that he was going to be healed, and he really worked that hard. And as we were going through 2 years of this disease, praying for healing, and healing's not coming, at some point I think we can still hold out hope for healing at the same time deal. What if not? What are we going to do? And how can you help your wife make some of the decisions she's going to have to make once you're gone? And if you can't have that conversation, and we couldn't, because I'm going to be healed. I'm going to be fine. I'm not dying here. And you know what I love about a journey that encompasses the love of God is that it allows us to accept the fact that these are my circumstances today. I might want God to change them. I might be praying about that. But if they don't change, and if over time we're seeing them not change, then you get the realization that God's doing something different here than the thing we want. And that's often true of my prayer life. I think that's what Ephesians 3 is all about. God's got better things to give us. God's got stuff in his heart that's beyond anything we could ask or ever imagine. So now that invites us onto a bit of a different journey. It's not just, you know, I want a 3-bedroom home, so God will give me a 4-bedroom. What that's saying is God's doing an inner work. God's got a purpose unfolding in the earth. He's got a purpose unfolding in you. And you don't know what that is. And all of that purpose isn't summed up in our convenience or comfort in this life. So now I get to go on a journey with him and saying, well, God, I'd love if this happened, but it's not happening. So if this doesn't change, how can I be most helpful? And I hope when my time comes, if I beat Sarah to the front, as I've joked a little later, I think dying's got to be a heck of a journey into the fullness of all that God is that we taste and know in part in this life. So I think it's getting like to the front of the line at Disneyland, the Star Tours line or the Magic Mountain, or not Magic Mountain, sorry about that, the Space Mountain ride. You know, you wait in line for an hour and you finally get to the front and now we're going for a ride. If I beat Sarah to the front of the line, I hope as I get to the front of that line, if I'm aware of it when it's happening, that I'm able to really have the conversation with Sarah. We've already had a lot of those conversations from both ways in dealing with our wills and dealing with those things like that. What happens if one of us is gone? And with the travel I do, and, you know, we just lost an airplane over the Indian Ocean. So we're always aware that we do not know. And I love James, in the book of James, where he says, you know, when you say you're going to do this or that, say the Lord willing, because you don't really know what God has in mind. And I love that. I don't know. That's what makes life an adventure. That's what makes, you know, I may be going to Virginia tomorrow. If not, that's going to mess up a whole lot of people's plans because I know people are flying in for that thing. So obviously they won't hear this until I'm already there and then they won't have to worry about it. But I'm hoping it comes together. But I don't know that. Things could change today. And we live in the freedom of that. It's much less anxiety, much less performance-based, and allows us to get into that bigger space of freedom. I had some conversations last week about this journey talk, not just on email, but some personal conversations as well, because I think people who are waking up to that reality, oh, it's not just a set of standards or rituals I'm supposed to perform every day and earn my worth that way. Actually, God's invited me on a journey, and it starts with just little inklings of things. It doesn't start with, you know, God rending the heavens and showing up, thus saith the Lord, Wayne, go do such and such. It begins by an awakening to a different reality. And then I either give place to that reality and explore it and learn it, or like we talked about earlier, I get distracted and I wander off in other things and like, I really want to get back to that reality. I come back to him. God's always faithful to be there saying, come back up on this journey. I want to walk you into the greatest places of freedom, freedom from your own desires, freedom from your own coping mechanisms. And we're not smart enough to do that on our own. We're not smart enough to set the rules and tell everybody else how to do it. What we want to help people do is learn to walk with Jesus. He's that good shepherd that's going to lead us into life. And if we don't have that in mind, then the whole journey gets incredibly distorted. I had someone a couple weeks ago send me a link, just said, hey, I've really enjoyed some of the stuff coming out of this fellowship. And he sent me, I'm not going to tell you who it is. I'm not going to give you the website for this because I want to really be honest about it. And I don't want them to feel trashed or their website bombarded. But this is a congregation that has a perspective about that I think has a lot of kingdom priorities, to be honest. To love, to live freely, to be mindful of the least, the last, and the lost, not just to build an empire for themselves. It's a lot of things. I can understand why I was sent the link, because I read that and go, yeah, I really resonate with this. But I just clicked on over to see what this group was about, because I'm always – I think there's something inherently weird about trying to put the kingdom of God, that life, into a human run institution. Now, I've been doing it for 2,000 years, but I think it's crazy. I think when you see the transcendent church as the fullness of him who fills everything in every way, and how do we create the institution that does that? And fortunately, I had my chance. I had a lot of chances to try and create institutions that would do that, and you come away going, in the end, they don't. In the end, the transcendence of that can't be contained. So what I just want you to get from this, I'm going to read you a little bit about one of their, they talk about ways they're weird in terms of how other quote-unquote churches would deal with these things. And so it says this, our elders have limited income and limited assets. Listen to this. Some of our elders work full-time for the church, some part-time, others in secular careers, but they have all agreed to limit their incomes and assets, whether from the church or from other sources, including spouses' incomes. Our reason? First, we believe materialistic avarice is the curse of American society. Can't disagree with them there. Often including the American church. As elders, we want to set an example for the church that says we can live at the need level, not at the greed level. Notice Paul did this by working hard and living simple in Thessalonica. He quotes 2 Thessalonians 3:9, we did this not because we do not have the right to such help, but in order to make ourselves a model for you to follow. The level to which elders' incomes are limited is very comfortable, so it's hardly asceticism. We also observe that many churches are controlled by the wealthy and are insensitive to the poor and even to students. And when wealthy people get the church to commit to expensive options, the church ends up in debt and even more beholden to the wealthy. For a number of reasons, we feel it's good for elders to live at an income level similar to or below most of our membership. Wealth can easily develop into an attraction that competes with the Lord for our attention. We want our only elders who would gladly disown their wealth in order to have the opportunity to serve God. Those who refuse to divest themselves may be signaling a problem. We want our elders to have their attention focused on spiritual matters, not on the playthings of the wealthy. So, I mean, you do catch there's a little bit of a slap-handed that if you're wealthy, you're corrupt. Now, often that's true. Often if you're wealthy, you're distracted, but not necessarily true. He continues, not only elders' incomes, but also assets come under scrutiny. In American culture, it's unusual for adults to receive an inheritance. It is not unusual for adults to receive an inheritance from a wealthy relative that could unbalance their lives. A man or woman who hardly thought about money before may become fascinated by money after receiving a $1 million inheritance. Therefore, we call on elders to disclose their assets. And if they are excessive beyond a home and some modest savings or retirement, we agree to divest ourselves of the excess. We think our policy is in general harmony with 2 Timothy 3:2, 3, and 4, where Paul urges Timothy, suffer hardship with me as a good soldier of Christ Jesus. No soldier in active service entangles himself in the affairs of everyday life so that he may please the one who enlisted him as a soldier. Now, you're going to read that, and when I first read that, I'm going, man, some of this stuff is really good. It really true. The corruption of money, the fact that the wealthy end up overspending the money of the congregation, therefore become more dependent upon the wealthy. Do all these things happen? They do. Here's the taint in it. Is the fix then to create a set of rules that others are going to abide by? And then the accountability where we have to disclose all our financial assets to our brothers and sisters in Christ. And I'm telling you, I've had elders in the past, good friends, loving brothers and sisters that I wouldn't mind having done that with in the spirit of friendship. But I've also seen those exact elders, when they decide to turn on you and use whatever relationship they have with you for their own gain, that relationship would become incredibly destructive. I can't even imagine having people that are going to, okay, we're going to overlook each other's affairs. And if you receive an inheritance from your family, if you're at the level that we've already set, then you've got to give it away. Why? Here's the bottom line. We don't trust Jesus to be at work in you. We don't trust him to work in you in whatever way he needs to. And if wealth distracts you into a side road, then you know what? Go be distracted into that side road and let him call you back. Let him, you know, that's what we're afraid of. And so we've been doing this, and this is an extreme example, but we've been doing this for 2,000 years. We've been going through the scriptures and we'll find a proof text to make a rule. And now we give the rule to the people to say, okay, this is the rule because we have all these good ideas and motivations. And we have these scriptural proof texts that we can now say, okay, this supports our rule. So now here's the rule. If you're really committed to Jesus and you really want to be one of his servants, you will do what we're saying. And if you don't, then there's something wrong with you and you're given to money and wealth and you're less a person, less a gift in the family if you're not going to let us control your income and assets. And that's exactly the spirit underlying this. It looks like the spirit of, or just trying to be better than most, but the spirit of it is control. We're going to control you, and we're going to control it this way. And, you know, for all the motives that might be good, the reality is we've moved from the gospel, which is Jesus gets to live in you. And as he lives in you, he's going to write his laws on your heart and your mind. So there's going to be things that as you go on this journey with him that just seem to affirm the journey, grow the journey. There's ways of living and thinking and talking to people that grows the journey. And then your heart's going to go there. And then there's other things that don't grow the journey. They make you restless. They make you feel emptier inside. And then the pursuit of wealth will do that. There's no doubt in my mind it will do that. But it doesn't mean that wealth of itself is wrong. It doesn't mean that God doesn't want to give you things for you to give away to others, that God doesn't want us to enjoy the life that we have. Because I think God does want us to enjoy the life we have. But the learning to live free in him, whether it's, as Paul said, having plenty and excess, which he talked about, and it doesn't come up here. Paul talked about having a lot and having a little. And they've jumped on, oh, the little is the way he lived. Well, there were times. He wasn't afraid of the little. He also wasn't afraid of the lot because it was in God that he wanted to live. And Jesus is the good shepherd of the sheep. And rather, see, here's where we make this fatal jump in and where life of Jesus becomes a religion called Christianity. Instead of teaching you to follow him, I'm going to give you a set of rules to follow, and this is what he wants for you, so follow them instead. It seems so innocent. I want to bash people over the head with, it's incredibly significant when you give up the hope that Jesus can live, not just in you, in the people around you, he can draw them into his life, and that our leadership or giftings with each other. That doesn't diminish, you know, the fivefold apostles, prophets, whatever. I know people always get nervous. Well, you're just diminishing because Jesus is going to lead people. No, those gifts help equip people to be led by Jesus. They don't supplant it. And for 2,000 years, people who presume to be in leadership supplant it. It's just, it's easier to give you rules than it is to help you walk with Jesus. Because helping you walk with Jesus is an individual, I've got to spend time with you and help you get the journey. And making rules is what sustains a crowd and a group and an institution, rather than, we can't do that with everybody. So instead of, we will set the rules, have you follow them, and see where you go. Now, what I love about this is how God invites us into freedom. And I've watched this process happen with all kinds of people because this idea, and it's not always as extreme as, you know, people knowing your income and assets and controlling that, but the idea that here's the rules Jesus gave us to follow and that Christianity becomes, I go to these meetings, observe these rituals, believe these doctrines, and try to live my life this way. Now, when people get involved in that, and in some way they open to Jesus because Jesus makes himself known even in places like that, people get an inkling of who he is, and they get a hunger for that. And then there comes the time where they realize there is a big disconnect between the life in Jesus I want to have and where I'm lost in following all the rules right now and trying to. And even when I'm successful at them, it just makes me self-righteous. And when I'm not successful at them, it makes me feel condemned because I'm not working hard enough. And so there comes the day. This day of awakening, or I don't think it's just a day, it's a period of time, where my heart begins to awaken to the fact that, you know what? this isn't what I was promised. This isn't what Jesus talks about follow me. It's not my rules written in your heart, and all will know me from the least to the greatest. I've been given a religious way of living that doesn't lead to life. There's something wrong with it. And a lot of us do the kind of research and have the kinds of questions that when we're getting burned out on religious performance, or we're just seeing the complete ineffectiveness of religious obligation, that we begin to think differently, and we begin to find scriptures or books that talk differently. And then the first thing we seem to want to do, and I'm just going to give you part of the journey as I've seen it with people. I get emails all the time. You know, either people found my website at some point and went, oh gosh, and I get the email, Wayne, thank you. Now I know I'm not nuts, or someone out there that thinks like I do. And I always write back humorously, you know, I hate to be people's standards for being nuts, because what if I'm nuts? In fact, I wrote an article called The Nut Test, which I'll link at the bottom of this podcast if you want to go read it, a long time ago, because people just kept using me as the nut test. I'm not nuts if there's a Wayne Jacobson out there who agrees with me. And I've always kidded about, what if I'm wrong? But I know in the initial stages of this, as we're awakening to something, we want to find someone who agrees with what we're seeing, because that's helpful. And then we want to get our friends to agree. And some of it's altruistic. Hey, I'm finding great freedom here, and I want you to too. And just knowing they're going to be as excited as I am, and then absolutely shocked when they're not. Because until God awakens you into the brokenness of our religious systems, you can't see it. Particularly those that are working hard and doing, I've got a lot invested in it. Just because I can only say, you know what, I think that's not right anymore. And I was surprised when this happened. People didn't jump on my bandwagon. People were not excited. People were threatened and they were scared. And because we've been taught to learn live out of our head instead of our hearts, what we usually do is go down this road for a while of not only am I trying to find out what's true here, but I need to convince other people what's true because I get my validation from other people. We've done that from the beginning of religion. It's always about being validated by the powers that be in my life because I don't have enough knowing of God to be at rest in what I know about Him, even if it's different from all the religious voices around me. So we awaken to that. Something begins to shift in us. We try to convince, then we get rejected sometimes. That hurts. And then we just kind of, because we're so easily sucked back into religious ways of thinking, particularly if you've been schooled in them a long time, the next phase of the journey for many people seems to be, I've just got to avoid every religious voice in my life. And it even comes from looking down on them and putting motives to their bondage that probably isn't there. It's just bondage. It's not necessarily they want to be horrible people who make everybody do it their way. They just think that's the only right way to do it. And so for a while, you've got to run from any conceivable religious voice at all, even if that puts you into an isolated space. That's very normal. People do that on this journey. Not everybody. I'm not describing a route that everyone takes. But then there's that time of, I've just got to avoid that religious voice. I can't handle it. I don't want to hear it. And so they cut themselves off from it. In the midst of that, the awakening continues. Throughout this all, God keeps waking us up into a different reality. I'm big enough to hold you. I love you. I'm going to get you through this. I have people in the world that see this differently, who see it more like you do now. And yet, you may not know a lot of them, but they're there. And I just want you to keep loving me. I just want you to keep coming into the space. I want you to learn the joy of living in freedom, the reality that, no, everything's not right in you, but you're not big enough to fix it. So just let me, in the loving of you, lead you into more spacious places of freedom and life. And as that freedom increases in our own heart and life, and the freedom from needing other people's validation, that's one of the things you get to lose. The freedom from having to convince others that I'm right, that's another thing you get to lose. And when you get into this incredible space of freedom just to follow Jesus as best you see it every day, and free to make mistakes in the growing, and free to not be perfect today because the process is ongoing, and God keeps inviting me into bigger space. And I think the joy of this comes when you see some things begin to shift in your life, and you're in circumstances acting differently than you would have acted 3 months, 6 months, 8 months previous. That's where the journey gets exciting. Wow, this really does work. He really does change us from the inside. I'm in a situation now, not reacting in the old ways Wayne would have reacting, but now having a different mindset and a different capacity to love the people involved. So as the freedom comes, and as the freedom comes, you look back at your former friends or current friends that are still captive in religion, and they're not the enemy anymore. I love this part of the process. I'm talking years of stuff here if it takes that. Some of you may get through in a couple of months. I didn't. But to the point then, you know, when you're coming into better places of freedom, when you look back at the people who are captured in the same bondage of religious obligation that you were, and maybe even some of the captors, and instead of being angry at them or threatened by them, you hurt for them. You actually have an affection for them. And it's an affection that's not threatening. It's not, I was going to draw me into a weird space and I've got to stay. You know, as long as those voices drag you down, stay away from them. I think that's a fine part of the journey. This is where you can't teach principles. Teach the journey. It's fine. There's, you know, today, people that you can be with, things that you can read, again, that grow the journey in you, that grow your sense of awareness about God and His love, that set you at rest in His reality. Pursue those. And you know other voices that are in your life, and you know what? They're just destructive. And they may be destructive because they're mean to you, and they may be destructive because they really like you, but they suck you back into a reality. And man, I get this email all the time from people that, you know, I started on this journey a few years ago, and then I got sidetracked back into it. We tried another group, another way, maybe we can find a way to do it. And now it didn't work, so we're back out again. And now we're trying to find it. And then the one person wrote me recently, I love this email, just said, you know, we read some stuff a years ago. We were involved in this thing. We decided maybe there's a thing that was bad. So we got involved in another thing we thought was better. And now we found ourselves at the same place. Why? Because it's not a group, a leader. It's that whole system of we can make rules and get other people to follow it. And then the following of it, we get validated and feel good about. When that begins to break down, if your heart is still sucked towards that, and I think in the early days, we talked about gravity a while back, you know, if you fly from the earth to the moon, there's a point at which the earth's gravity suddenly loses its power. And now you're more influenced by the gravity of the moon. I think that journey's like that. I think in the early days, the gravity of religious obligation is huge. And when you're escaping that, you don't need to try and be kind and generous and affectionate towards people who are the gravity pulling you back. But once you get beyond that gravity, however long that takes, now you get to turn around and go, you know what? I actually care about those people. I actually care about the place they're in. I'm actually sorry they're there. Now, I may not, and when you're free not to have to convince them, especially for you to feel validated, or even to convince them because you think that's the tool, you don't. You just get to love them, pray for them, talk about your journey when it's appropriate. Let God awaken in them the journey they need to be on. But now you're in a place to love them. And a compassion to care for the religious. I think Jesus cared deeply for those religious guys. Yeah, they were doing stuff that was horrible to people, but they didn't see it. They didn't know it. He was able to love them, and he was able to have compassion for those. And I got in a good conversation this weekend about compassion. Notice the things Jesus did so often in the Gospels. He was moved with compassion. Jesus wasn't in the world going, okay, I have to serve people today, so I got to do something nice, random acts of kindness for people, I got to heal people. Jesus was moved by compassion. He followed that reality. There are people in my life that don't move me with compassion. And if they don't move me, if I'm not moved by compassion, it doesn't have anything to do with them. It may have simply to do with my involvement with them, whether it's time, whether it's good, whether it's right, whether I'm ready, whether. And when you're on a journey, it's okay to go, man, I have compassion there. I'm going to explore that. Or you know what? I could try to do something nice there. And you can always be nice. You don't have to be mean to people to live in this world. You can be nice to people you don't like. But when you're moved with compassion, what if we began to explore our days, not by what should I do for God, but simply, where does compassion move me today? Where am I drawn to people who encourage my journey? Where am I drawn to people that I get to love them in the midst of their journey? And lived inside the moving of God in our hearts rather than the shoulds of what we ought to do. And live in that reality and freedom. And that takes you to places you just can't imagine. last week I went up and spent some days with my parents because I knew I was be on the road for a bit, and I just wanted to check in with them. And it's a 5-hour drive, and I was alone. So driving in my car, and I listened to the podcast that I listened to, or I was all out of them. And I just was listening to some random music on my iPhone as I was driving, and the song came on. It's a movie, a song from a movie, and as it starts to be sung, it's not a great song, but there was a solo part in it by someone that's well known, and was actually in the movie. And when I started to hear it, the first twist in my heart was, ah, crud, not her. Because I don't respect the way she lives. I don't respect the choices she's making for her life. And then, as I listen to two measures of that song, my heart just began to break for her. This compassion just rose up in my heart, and I don't do this. I don't drive around in my car crying. But I just was crying, and something in the back of my heart said this: that's my little girl. She's gotten lost. I cried for 10 or 15 minutes. I just poured out my heart to God for that little girl. I prayed that God would draw her to himself. I prayed that God would make himself known to her. And I went from really disgust to compassion in a moment, because something out of that space in my heart that I know to be godly, something rises up. And I just, for the next half hour, it's, God, what do I do with this? Is it my prayer you want for her? Because she has it. When I think about her name now, something stirs in my heart, and I just pray for her. Do you want me to write her a letter? And I don't have any sense that that's what he wants me to do. That's what I would do, just because I got to do something with this. I don't know. I live in Los Angeles. Not that I couldn't cross her somewhere in the world in God's timing. I don't know any of that. But I loved seeing that work in my heart. I love the journey that's taken me to the place where I can care about people and have a deep compassion for people that 2 seconds before I might have regarded with disgust. And that comes from a different space in my life that's not helpful. It's a journey. It surely is. And we can't control those kinds of realities when they surface in our heart, when we're ready to, you know, be back with more religious people because we're not influenced by them in the same way we were and can love them, or when we can actually love somebody that's in a pretty broken place. And what that did for me, whether I don't know if I'll ever cross paths with this person. I don't even know that that's important to God at this stage. But what it has done is what other people I've crossed paths with since that time, this is almost a week ago now, and the disgust starts to surface, it's changed me. It just, I won't go there anymore. I look at them with a different eye. I pray with them with a different heart. I'm finding compassion for people that are in that space of people I wouldn't be taken to externally, but now genuinely care about. See, and that's what I love about this journey. It's that kind of a journey that keeps inviting us into different rooms. Maybe it's just like walking down a cave and you're exploring this beautiful cave and you think you're almost in the beautiful room imaginable. And you go through another passage and you enter into this other section and go, wow, that's even better than that section. And then you go through another and that. And you know what? You don't get to rush it. You don't have to rush it. The thing you do is what I said earlier to you. What engagements do I have today that open the journey for me in a wider space? And engage it. What do I do today that shrinks me back into the old Wayne and the old disgusting ways of being, and avoid those? And in the process, just learn to lean in, listen, talk to him, let that journey explore so that God becomes more real in our hearts. And where he becomes more real, change comes. We don't have to make rules for people, because it's the knowing of him that transforms us. It's not by knowing his ways of doing things that we then try to emulate in our own strength that leads us to any freedom at all. It sounds good. Here's what God wants. Yeah, he does. Well, then I'm going to try hard to get that. Well, you won't get there. But love him, live in him, open your heart to him, and it's amazing what he'll do. Well, I'll be gone the next couple of weeks, so I don't know when we'll get a podcast up again. I don't know if there'll be some things to do while I'm gone, or if I'll have a chance to get back here and do something, particularly with all that's going on in my family. So, yeah, we'll have to see. It is, after all, a journey. And no, I don't have it all figured out.
traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com.